Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'll be your host for this episode, which very excitingly is our very special Ashes Preview Special. So to make this a success, I wanted a co-host alongside me with an outstanding knowledge of the game and a peerless international reputation as a pundit, and I knew there was only one man for the job. But since he wasn't available, instead I've got Tony Kerr.
You alright?
Yeah, not bad, Tone. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good, thanks.
Good to be here.
Very.
You'll see I'm rocking the Christmas jumper
today.
You're
right in the spirit.
We're recording this on the 1st of December.
It's not our Christmas special, though, so you're not kind of, yeah, you're a bit overdressed, really, I'd say.
You want me to take it off?
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I've had the Christmas jumpers lined up on my dressing table, if that's a thing that I have. For weeks now, I've just been absolutely itching to get them on, and I woke up this morning, bounded out of bed. It's like Christmas morning for me, literally, Christmas jumper morning, and I will just wear a Christmas jumper now every day until the end of the year and beyond.
I think we did threaten to have a World Cricket Show Christmas jumper at one point. It may have even happened, and I've just forgotten about it. Maybe we should revive that.
It may have even happened, and I took all the profits from the sales. Yeah.
I wonder why I was getting all those ads.
Less said about that, the better. How are you doing anyway? Are you excited for this Ashes preview?
I'm excited for the preview, yeah. Whether I'm excited for the Ashes is a question you're going to ask me.
Are you going to try and suggest that, much like with the T20 World Cup preview we did, that this should be the pre-preview? You're not quite ready for the preview. I hate to break it to you, Tony. This is the preview. So I hope you've done all your research, done all the homework I asked you to do, and you've not come in here completely unprepared. No, I can see... Look, just looked over, spotted your iPad. You've got a screen grab of Tim Payne's text messages there. So you're well prepared.
Yeah,
for this.
I'm a bit undercooked, but I'm just getting the things that we might need to hand.
So that's good. Well, we have got lots to talk about, including some off the field issues like that. But yes, the prime thrust of this episode is to preview the Ashes. We're going to be delivering the comprehensive lowdown on all the teams involved in this year's Ashes series, making some predictions as well. I'm sure there is quite a bit to discuss, as alluded to, some off the field things with Tim Payne, Pat Cummins and all that. We have got some other things to talk about. There's lots going on in cricket at the moment. India v New Zealand, there's a test series going on. What in reality could be argued is a much more interesting test series between the world's number one and two teams has started in thrilling fashion. So we'll definitely touch on that at least. And obviously the big story in cricket at the moment continues to be the racism scandal that's blown up in the wake of Azeem Rafiq's testimony to the House of Commons Select Committee. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. Lots to get through here, Tone. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, bring it on.
Let's start with the Ashes. Because the Ashes is very much up in our grill piece now. The first test kicks off in Brisbane on Wednesday, the 8th of December. As I mentioned, we're recording this on the 1st of December. So if any captains resign or if anything else happens in the next few days, I'm just sort of date stamping when we're speaking. There's never any shortage of talking points coming into an Ashes series, but this time it feels like there are more talking points than ever, many of them off the field, as I say. We're going to get into all of them, but here's my first question for you, Tone, and it's a corker. Mm-hmm. How excited are you for the Ashes?
Reasonably, I guess. it's going to be, it's going to be a welcome distraction
from
some things. I don't know. No, am I excited? Yeah, I guess there's an inherent excitedness, isn't there? excitability around the Ashes. Clearly, once we're underway, and you know, there is a lot of uncertainty around this series. Probably way more uncertainty than there's ever been. In that sense, yeah, quite intrigued to see how it kind of plays out. And actually, you know, it could throw up some big surprises, or you know, there is a real unpredictability to, I think, well, apart from the fact that England are going to lose 5-0, there's a real unpredictability to just how they're going to lose it 5-0. Yes. Because we don't know, you know, we don't know where, in effect, really, what the matches will look like, even what order they'll be played in terms of the venues, or what will happen towards the end of the... Yeah, and there's so many question marks on there to do with quarantines, obviously the new variant, all this kind of, all this jazz. Both teams... A pretty...
What new variant? Yeah. And this is how I find out about it.
And both teams are like as undercooked as they've ever been, probably. I mean, you know, you probably go back and listen to our Ashes previews of yesteryear.
I recommend it.
Yeah.
It's really a worthwhile way to spend your time at the moment.
But, you know, in sort of living memory, I think we've been saying, you know, that teams have been going in undercooked to a lot of test series, but certainly Ashes as well. But, you know, obviously a lot's been made of the fact that only 29 overs have been bowled in the build up to the series for England. Both teams are going to basically walk onto that first test pitch, probably not really knowing what kind of shape they're in.
There's been a lot of rain in Brisbane where England have been warming up, hasn't there? Kind of an unusual weather event, and as you say, only 29 overs of preparation for England, of middle preparation.
I mean,
so
it's my
far
kind of preparation. Like, if I was, you know, if you'd asked me to tour Australia five tests, would I want to play a couple of warm-up matches? Probably not. I think I'd get there, you know, sort of half an hour before the first test and get straight in. But yeah, obviously these guys are operating on a slightly different level of commitment and personal pride, so they'll probably want to be want to be in as good a shape as they can be.
Yeah, but that's because you don't actually like playing cricket that much. I mean, you do like playing cricket, but for like, you know, 15, 20 overs. It's like our friend of the show, Dave, who was opening batsman for our school first 11, but used to just be absolutely delighted whenever the game was rained off. And whenever we discuss, you know, the concept of international players going to do a tour, you know, going... tour Australia for an Ashes series, be like, God, I can't think of anything worse. Think of all that fielding. It's like, Dave, I think you might be playing the wrong sport.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the attitude that the England players have. I imagine they're probably disappointed not to have had more practice. As you say, it's surely the oddest build-up to an Ashes series, certainly in recent memory, possibly ever, as well as the fact that the warm-up has been disrupted. You've got English cricket under a cloud with the Azeem Rafiq stuff, which we're going to talk about later. You've got Australian cricket under a cloud, which we're going to talk about very shortly. Obviously, the pandemic as well, as you touched on, Tone. You know, a couple of months ago, we weren't sure if it would happen. It still might not. I mean, I'm sure, I mean, I think it probably will, and I'm sure at least some of it will, but it could still yet be heavily disrupted by Omicron. People,
care, really.
If you're correcting, I mean, people, yeah, get a lot. I don't think it's the most important element of the story, but you do see a lot of people. I've heard people say, it's Omicron.
Yeah, I just give up, really.
The fifth test is still supposed to be in Perth, but there's still a doubt about whether that can happen because of the quarantine rules there. It could yet be moved to Tasmania. So,
and there's also the possibility of more than becoming day-night matches or things being swapped around. So
it's a fairly chaotic build-up, I think it would be fair to say. But when we get to Brisbane next week, well, we're not going to go to Brisbane, but when, you know, when it gets to midnight and we're kind of huddled under the doona on the sofa and you turn on the TV and it's bright blue skies and bright green outfield and the teams come out and we have the anthems and we have Jerusalem, there's a full house at the Gabba, you know, will all this stuff that we're talking about here, will all of that just kind of melt away, do you think, or not?
Yeah, to a certain extent, yeah, because you're just being into the swing of it, things, you know, all that will be forgotten in the sense that, you know, players will be praised, celebrated, berated, humiliated based on what they've done and whether they've had the chance to adequately prepare or not, really.
And that's just on the World Cricket Show.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I have a certain sympathy with the squads, because yeah, this is the number one, well, for us anyway, it's the number one series, isn't it? It's the one,
it's the pinnacle,
and you know, it's unfortunate that that certain players probably aren't in the position that they might want to be in going into it. That's funny. It is weird, isn't it? Thinking back to, I don't know, last year or the start of last summer and looking ahead and thinking, well, will this series happen? I mean, it's great that it is happening. It's frustrating, though, that there's still that cloud hanging over it.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm suggesting is that perhaps once it actually starts and once cricket is happening, that might dissipate a bit, or at least, you know, once the series has happened, we might not remember this build up so much.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
But maybe not. I mean, it might be that it's just, you know, that the cricket's underwhelming and it continues to be under a cloud all the way through. I don't know.
And by the cloud, you mean the pandemic? Cloud.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obvious. I don't think the pandemic's going to blow over before next Wednesday, to be honest. Hate to break it to
that's
you.
One of the, yeah, cheers, mate. That's one of the, I suppose it's one of the sort of slightly, you know, you go in with a little bit of trepidation because obviously of how unsatisfactorily the summer ended for us in England in terms of that India series, which was, you know, poised. And then the final test got canned on the morning. Mm. So in that sense, you know, does that affect your sort of willingness to throw yourself all in the early, as a spectator, as a fan, in those early matches, knowing that, you know, actually the fifth test or the fourth, you know, whatever, they could all be pulled at the last minute?
Mm.
Or, well, you'd hope not. You'd hope they'd be able to be moved, but I don't know. That's nagging at the back of my head.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of uncertainty. We're going to start getting into the detail in a second, but just in terms of how excited I am, honestly, something that's taken the edge off my excitement just a little bit is that, you know, talking about being under the doona, honestly, I'm going to find it harder to stay awake to watch much of it this year than in the past, due to a combination of, you know, having a toddler and just getting old. Yeah, but maybe there'll be more day-night games, Tane. I mean, that's something to root for us, because then we can at least watch some of it in the morning. And, you know, for me, that's an incentive to get up early, to do the morning shift. It sounds a little ridiculous, but something else that's taking the edge off my excitement just a smidge is the fact that it's on BT. You know, there's going to be no Atherton, no Hussain. It's going to be the Australian commentary.
Well, has that been settled yet? Because perhaps we'll come on to this in a bit, but yeah, all the reports over the last week were that BT was scrambling to find a new commentary team because they don't want to take the Australian feed with Vaughan.
Get the other Australian feed. Are they trying to recruit their own commentary team now?
From my understanding, yeah, they were looking for a commentary. I mean, this could be us. They were looking for a commentary team, UK based, to gabble all over the feed rather than have like 20 minutes of Vaughan every couple of hours. Right.
This could be our audition. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, true. Yeah,
should cut out all that nonsense Christmas jumper chat at the start, shouldn't I? And maybe I should cut out the fact that I've said it's taking the edge of my excitement that it's on BT.
Yeah, it's just ramping up your excitement.
Something that's making me really excited about this series, the fact it's going to be on BT Sport. They do a great...
I mean, they do a cracking job on the football.
They do a great landline as well, yeah. Don't they? Fantastic landline from BT. I mean, turning to the cricket itself, maybe it's foolish if we are really excited about it, because... Not foolish, possibly a bit strong, but we might be over-optimistic, because it's certainly not beyond the realms of possibility that this will be a pretty one-sided series. You mentioned, Tane, the only certainty. There's a lot of uncertainty around. The only certainty is that England are going to lose 5-0. I mean, that's obviously you're possibly exaggerating for comic effect, or maybe not. But certainly on England's two previous trips to Australia, they've been on the wrong end of absolute tonkings. And given all the problems in their team at the moment, particularly in the batting, it's not too difficult to make a case that we're going to see a similar outcome this time. Perhaps that's too pessimistic. We'll get into England's team in a bit, but it could also be too pessimistic because Australia have some significant problems of their own. Most obviously, they've had to find a new captain because just a couple of weeks before the series, Tim Payne resigned. I'm just going to quickly read this article from The Guardian. I'm sure virtually everybody listening to this knows the story, but just in case you've only kind of read a headline. Tim Payne resigns as Australia's Test cricket captain over private text messages sent to colleague. A tearful Tim Payne announced his resignation as Australia's Test cricket captain after a previous investigation into a sexting scandal surfaced less than 3 weeks before the start of the Ashes, sending the host plans for the series into disarray. Payne stood down at a press conference in Hobart after it became clear to him that details of explicit text messages sent to a female former colleague in 2017, which predated his appointment as test captain, were about to be made public. An integrity unit investigation 4 years ago had cleared Payne of any breach of Cricket Australia's code of conduct, but he said he deeply regretted his actions at the time and still to this day. Payne said it was a difficult decision to make, but the right one for me, my family and cricket. We thought this incident was behind us and that I could focus entirely on the team, as I have done for the last 3 or 4 years. However, I recently became aware that this private text exchange was going to become public. On reflection, my actions in 2017 do not meet the standard of an Australian cricket captain or the wider community. I'm deeply sorry for the hurt and pain that I have caused. Pat Cummins has been appointed to take over. We'll talk about him in a second, but what's your take on this, Tony? Do you have a take on this? Do you have a view? It's tricky, isn't it? Because it's such a mess. And the fact that Payne is Payne's decision to step down, there's almost not that much to say about it in a way, because it's like, well, he decided that that was the right thing for him to do. But I don't know, there's just something quite sort of strange about this whole story.
Yeah. Well, the timing obviously didn't help. Possibly, yeah, you know, we're coming at it from a different angle in terms of, you know, an offence to what's happening in England and all that, you know, as we're going to come on to, I'm sure, you know, the scandal around Azeem Rafiq and his experiences. Arguably, there was a slight sort of hastiness to it. I've heard some people say that perhaps it was, it was the right decision because if he, you know, you sort of take the hit and that actually, you know, make the apology, whether everyone would agree that that's needed or not, and you can sort of just move on from it. Maybe it's a slightly different situation with Payne because his whole position anyway has been questioned throughout his tenure as captain. The fact that, you know, should he even be in the team, you know, on his sort of playing ability alone, if you took the captaincy away from him. Now, that's not to say he clearly would have, I'm sure, liked to lead the side in a home Ashes. But in terms of his sort of future in and around Australian cricket as a whole, of the sport, then maybe it is the right decision in terms of kind of saving face somewhat. But it is strange, the fact that, as you say, the fact that, you know, the internal investigation, whatever, it's a few years ago, could he not just have come out and said, you know, it's an embarrassing episode that and move on? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worth saying as well that he is now taking an indefinite break away from cricket. So he's not going to play in the Ashes, or at least not at the start. You'd imagine not at all. There's been some suggestion there's concerns for his kind of well-being at the moment. As I say, there is just something a bit strange about it. It is a total mess. The texts, you know, we're obviously not going to read out the text, but they are available to read online. They're pretty tragic and cringy, and he's been a monumental idiot, and it's hard to defend the content of them. But, you know, by all accounts, the word that's been used is consensual. You know, there was some sort of relationship between these two people. His wife, I understand, knew about it since then, has forgiven him and moved on. The code of conduct investigation cleared him of any wrongdoing. They didn't ask him to resign when they found out about it a few months after he took over as captain. So,
and also the fact that it was just, you know, obviously then he's out in front of the cameras, obviously very upset about the situation and about the whole episode. And it's just, I don't know. Yeah, no, I agree. It doesn't kind of sit exactly right.
No, it's tricky. It's tricky territory. And like,
again, we'll come onto it with Azeem Rafiq. You know, we're not, this is another thing where we're, I suppose, the type of people who aren't the victims,
sure,
quote unquote, in these sort of situations.
So we do have to be careful here. But and the woman in question has subsequently made a sexism complaint against Cricket Tasmania, but about somebody else, not about Tim Payne. And so, yeah, it's a tricky area. And you're right, we're not the right people to talk about these issues, particularly. It's difficult. And I do wonder, as you mentioned, that there were sort of questions about his place in the team anyway. And there's not been a massive outpouring of sympathy for him around the world. You know, and he obviously had that shocker of a series against India last year. He's not very popular with England fans because of things he said about Joe Root recently. And he's kind of the butt of quite a few jokes around the world. But that, I don't think that should colour. That shouldn't be relevant to this situation. What I mean is, I don't think people haven't been leaping to his defence in the way that they might have done for some other more popular players.
Yeah, and it, you know, I suppose it's a professional working environment. You know, would in other workplaces would this kind of episode be tolerated, or I was encouraged, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, would it be a lot of encouraged?
Strongly encouraged.
And I guess probably not. Yeah, I don't know. It's probably, yeah, there's probably another podcast in terms of like...
But I think it's the fact, like, if this was something that hadn't been known about before, you know, it had just come to light, that's different to the fact that they did know about it 3 years ago. They had an investigation, cleared him of any wrongdoing. It was the embarrassment of it going public is the issue, not the fact of it happening, it seems to me.
Presumably they would potentially, or it would have been made public had it not, the circumstance not been that it came to light, almost immediately after Payne being appointed captain to clean up Australian cricket, effectively, and clean up the image, you know?
Yeah.
Without that context, maybe it would have been... They, you know, both or all parties may have been more willing to make that public.
You think they tried to bury it,
possibly, and in a way, obviously the sort of the public scrutiny that comes from you know, journalists and from publication stuff is almost always free of the actual burden of actually, you know, the situation itself and what you would do. I don't know. I mean, it's easy to say. Or you should sort of make public all your previous wrongdoings and misdemeanors and embarrassments. But how many of those people who say that do that themselves?
It's a lot of skeletons in the World Cricket Show closet on their yeah. HR department working overtime over the years. I don't know. I certainly would not defend his actions, but there just seems something odd about the fact that this has happened and he's, you know, it's kind of ended his career. And yet he'd previously been cleared of wrongdoing, you know. So
yeah,
I feel sad for him, I suppose. I don't want to say I feel sorry for him, because as I say, I'm not defending what he did here, but I do feel sad. I think it's possible to feel sad for him as well. The man to replace Tim Payne's is Pat Cummins.
Tim Payne's.
The man to replace Tim's Payne is Pat Cummins. Steve Smith announced his vice captain as well, which is quite interesting. Bloody hell, it is raining hard outside, Tane.
It is coming down, mate.
Is it hailing? I can't really see the harbour, mate. It's raining so hard. It's partly because the blinds are almost closed. But anyway, yes. So Steve Smith, vice captain. Pat Cummins, the captain. Any surprise that it's Cummins? Was he the obvious candidate, do you think?
Well... yes.
Ken, I could see your iPad from here. You just got the Australia squad open. Yeah. I asked you that, you just swipe down through it. Other names springing up?
He was vice captain. Yeah. By all accounts, you know, he was the kind of the other... By all accounts, he has been a core part of the sort of leadership team, if you like, for a while. So, yeah, I mean, it seems the obvious choice. Obviously, there are the question marks over whether a bowler should captain the side. Mm. And there is probably a debate to be had there. Be interesting to see how he goes. I think the argument of the fact that bowlers are more likely to be rested, rotated and stuff is valid. But equally, rest and rotation, I think, is more, it's more kind of accepted pattern of selection now that actually, you know, if he does have to pass the captaincy on to someone else, does that really affect too much the role or the continuity or his own kind of authority? And probably not is the answer.
Yeah. Well, you would think though that he probably wouldn't be rested or rotated for a crucial match in a crucial series. Like, he's not going to be rested for the third test of this Ashes series. Yeah. If it's 1-1, yeah, it's unlikely that he would have been before becoming captain, but he's definitely not going to be now. But the resting thing is probably more of a red herring, but I suppose it's the injury thing, isn't it? Like, because he just is more likely to be injured. And it is, as you say, unusual to see a bowler, particularly a fast bowler, as a test captain. If you look around the world, we've got Jason Holder at the moment, but he's sort of the exception that highlights the rule. I've never understood the expression, the exception that proves the rule, but it's the exception that highlights the rule. And it, you know, in the past there's been Bob Willis, Wasim Akram, Marco Yunus, Sean Pollock, but there are, you can sort of count them, can't you? And no fast bowler has ever captained Australia full-time. Pat Cummins is the first. So there is this kind of notion, this accepted wisdom, that bowlers don't make good captains, or at least you assume that's the accepted wisdom, given that they are never made captains. Or do you think it's just about the injury and rotation thing, or is there something more to it, Tom?
I suppose it, well, I guess, once a pattern becomes a pattern, then, you know, people could largely follow suit, don't they? And it becomes the accepted wisdom. I don't see any reason why we couldn't see more bowlers captaining in future, for sure. But, yeah, it's just sort of the done thing, isn't it? Unless you're sort of forced to. I suppose there's probably, for the reasons just mentioned, you know, it is probably preferable to have a batsman who's likely to not be forced out of matches and
not be off the field during matches, exactly. Getting a back rub or something. Yeah.
And also less responsible for clearly what you're doing in the field is, if you've got a bowler who's captain in the side, clearly their main job is to be is to be carried out. Yeah. You know what I'm trying to say.
I do. I'm nodding and smiling now, like a teacher with a promising student.
Shut up. You know what I mean. So basically, the bowler's job is to be done away in the field. But yeah. Anyway, obviously, a batsman can get out there and just hit the ball, see ball, hit ball.
No, very good. Very good, Ted.
If you don't cut that, I'm coming for you.
Well, actually, I was reading about it as well. I didn't know about this. There is a quirk of cricketing history. You know, way back in the day, in the 19th century, there was this divide between gentlemen and players. There were amateurs and professionals, and the amateurs, I guess, would be the kind of...
Amateurs would be like... Just let them get there.
More from the upper class, the upper crust, and the... professionals be more from the working class, and the batsmen would tend to be the gentlemen, and so they would take the captaincy for themselves. So there is partly a kind of historical quirk, but I think there is a logic to it as well. I think the captain has a much bigger role to play when his side are fielding than when his side are batting, and can just concentrate on captaincy. You know, how easy is it for a bowler to concentrate on those two things at the same time? And, you know, maybe when it's going well in both departments, it is. But if you're having an off day as a bowler, or if the game's against you and you've got a lot to think about as a captain, you know, can you concentrate on both of those things at the same time? And then there's the issue that they either don't bowl themselves enough or bowl themselves too much, a la Andrew Flintoff in the Ashes 2006-07. But so if it is a... if it is a real thing, if it is a rule, if you like, then if anybody's going to escape it, Pat Cummins is probably as well equipped as anyone, you would say. He's obviously one of the best fast bowlers in the world. Much like Jason Holder, he's a very impressive young man, isn't he? And he's clearly got a good cricket brain, seems to be very highly respected. So he makes sense as a captain to me, but it will be an interesting one to keep an eye on. Turning to England then, Tone, England's confidence coming into this series should on paper be pretty low, you would think. They've lost the last two Ashes series in Australia, 4-0 and 5-0. They've had a very poor year in Test cricket, having lost to New Zealand and more or less lost to India at home this summer and lost in India earlier this year. Not won many Test matches this year. They've had a pretty underwhelming few years in Test cricket, you would say, and then as we mentioned, they've had virtually zero match practice coming into the series. But they did receive a massive boost a couple of weeks ago with the news that Ben Stokes is back. Wasn't expected to be part of this Ashes series as he was taking a break from cricket, but he made himself available again for the Ashes. How big is that for England, do you think, to have Stokes back?
Big.
Reasonably?
Reasonably, yeah. Overwhelmingly. clearly it's big, isn't it? It probably suits him that he's coming into a series where actually he's probably not in a dissimilar sort of place in terms of preparation than the most of the players that we're playing with
true.
And against. So
that is true.
So actually, he's probably as cooked as anyone. I mean, that tips the odds slightly towards England for sure. Because
what do you mean? Makes them favourites?
No. Like it tips them from 5-0 to maybe 4-1.
Right. Yeah.
Because what he's done so far, his ability single-handedly to win games, the mental space that he'll occupy in Australia's heads. It's a huge boost, isn't it?
Yeah. Although he hasn't played a Test match in Australia for 8 years. That was his kind of breakthrough series, and he scored that amazing 100 in Perth. But that's a long time ago. Last time around, he was suspended. How long ago does that feel, Tone? He missed the last Ashes series after the Bristol brawl. So he doesn't have a lot of experience of playing Test cricket in Australia. But yeah, clearly he's just a massive player for England. He's not played a lot of cricket this year, so could be expected too much from him. But as you say, you know, he's undercooked, but so is everybody else. You'd think, though, that he will lift the confidence of the group, of the dressing room, won't he? Just having Ben Stokes in the team, they'll just be more of a spring in the step of the rest of the players.
Yeah, I think we said, didn't we, the other week, you know, the fact that England were going in or looked like they were going in without Stokes and Archer, you'd have said absolutely no chance. Now you can probably talk yourself into thinking, you know, there'll be a contest.
Yeah, almost no chance, but...
Yeah. This is the thing, is it, that, we, you know, I'm trying to remember back to how we felt going into the last couple of series away and probably were obviously pessimistic, but you do learn, yeah, sort of slightly burnt by those two experiences in terms of the fact that you can go in with a solid-looking group and come out with absolutely nothing, and it can be quite a grim winter, so... Yeah, I don't know. I'm certainly not letting myself get carried away by the return of Stokes.
Looking at the England team, the big question for me is about the bowling attack. I mean...
what about the batting?
Probably the big... Yeah, so the two big questions, yeah. The three big questions, the bowling attack, the batting lineup and the fielding department. But no, I mean, the batting is probably more of a glaring problem. Definitely more of a glaring problem. But in terms of, you know... Can England win the series? Like, yeah, it's... Well, we'll talk about the batting in a second, and they've got an immense challenge on their hands, but there's absolutely no way that England are going to win this series if the bowling attack is as unthreatening as it was 4 years ago. So the if I had to boil it down to one key question, is have England got the firepower to take 20 wickets? I fear that I'm going to be spending a lot of time this winter watching Steve Smith bat, you know, under the doona, crying into my cereal. But maybe there's reason to be a bit more optimistic about England's bowlers this time round. Four years ago, you'd say there was definitely, they're just not enough pace. It was kind of Anderson, Broad, Wokes, Overton, you know, bowling 80 miles an hour, sometimes 78, 77 miles an hour. And pace isn't everything. Like, you can overstate that, and people will point to, quite rightly, the example of Vernon Philando, who's had a lot of success in Australia bowling at that kind of pace. Josh Hazlewood isn't lightning, 85, 86. I mean, there is a difference there, but nonetheless, you don't have to be 90, 95 mile an hour to take wickets in Australia. But if you haven't got the pace, then you need, like, exceptional skill. You need Vernon Philando levels of skill. And Anderson and Broad clearly have that, or have had that. Are they at that level anymore, is a question. But England do have Mark Wood, who does bowl that lightning pace. He's never played a test in Australia. He hasn't played a test against Australia since 2015, which could be a good thing. They've obviously played him in other forms of the game, but there's an element of the unknown there. Since that spell in St. Lucia 3 years ago, Tom, which you'll remember because we were there.
Yeah, it's like one of those things when you've seen one film and it's all you can talk about. It's like... Some of the only cricket we've seen live in recent years. But it was bloody brilliant.
It was a great bit of live cricket to see. And ever since then, I've been kind of dreaming about this moment, because you sort of thought, then a few months after that, I was like, well, there'll be Wood and Archer, but obviously it's just Wood. But the way he bowled that day, you think, well, if he can replicate that and bowl that fast and, you know, with that kind of hostility, that is a weapon that England can use to win in Australia.
Can he do it sort of... In 10 innings, though?
That's the question. Can he stay fit? Will he be asked to bowl too much? Can he bowl at that pace consistently? There might be too much riding on him now. But he's something that England have this time that they didn't have last time. And Ollie Robinson as well is not super quick, but he's, you know, he had a fantastic summer. He's bowled well on a Lions tour in the past in Australia. So I think, yeah, there's a little bit more reason to be cheerful about the England bowling than last time.
And I think with Robinson as well, he's got, there's an attitude there that will help, because he is kind of aggy, isn't he? He gets fired up. Okay, he could easily be kind of ground down over the course of the winter, but equally, you know, you can see him digging in and making something happen. even if it's just like wind up the bats, you know, it's like, you know, he's going to be in their face.
That's so true, yeah.
There is a sense that some of the teams that we've sent down there in the last few years, there's been a sort of passiveness to it, and we've sort of just been kind of bulldozed. But you know, again with Stokes in there, you know, he's not someone who's just going to roll over. So yeah, come on the lads.
Come
three,
on
3-2 England,
come on lads. Yeah, and Jack Leach, by the way, as well, who you know, well, there's a question about whether England have got quite a long tail, and Leach doesn't necessarily help with that, but you know, I think he's equipped to do well in Australia. I think he bowled very well in India earlier this year, and he will get through a lot of overs, and that might allow the likes of Mark Wood to rest and bowl shorter spells. You know, Moeen 4 years ago was getting tonked around, and it was very difficult for England to get control and tie down an end, and Leach might allow them to do that this time. So that's one of the big questions. The other big question is about the batting. Can the England batting stand up, Tone? Just that you look at the batting, and there's certainly not much experience there, not many test runs between them. There's a lot of potential. You know, we're talking about Haseeb Ameed, Rory Burns, Ollie Pope, Zach Crawley, Dan Lawrence. I mean, these are all exciting prospects, aren't they? But they are going to face a serious examination in this series. How much pressure, therefore, Tone, is on Joe Root? Is there any universe in which England can win or even compete if Root has a bad series?
Probably not. But I don't know. I think he's in the kind of place where I don't think he will have a bad series. I think I think you can rely on him at the moment in the kind of form that he's carried through the year, the things he's had to deal with as captain and the journey he's been on. I think he's in a decent place at the moment. So yeah, I think he'll get big runs.
1,455 runs so far in 2021 at an average of 66 with six centuries. He needs 334 more runs in the first three tests of the series to break Mohammad Yusuf's record for most runs in a calendar year. That has followed a lean couple of years, only scored two centuries in 20 tests across 2019 and 2020. But, you know, clearly, well, he's number one batsman in the world at the moment after the brilliant year he's had so far. His record in Australia isn't great, well, not as good. Average of 38 in nine tests, never scored a century in Australia. At the end of the series in 2013, he was dropped. But you don't look at him and think, well, he hasn't got the game to score runs in Australia. He has been in phenomenal form this year. It's obviously a few months now since he last played a test. But yeah, he's going to have an outstanding series if England are going to have any kind of chance. But you wouldn't bet against him doing that. So anyway, I am worried about England's batting. I'm always worried about England's batting, but never more so than when they play Australia in Australia. Particularly at the moment, because the Aussie bowling attack is very, very, very good. So much experience as well. They've got around 250 test caps between the four of them. Hazelwood, Stark, Cummins and Lyon. Is there anyone in particular you're most worried about there, Tone? Or is it the unit?
Yeah, I mean, there's just not many gaps, are there? There's not many, there's not a way through there.
Not much let up.
No. Particularly worried about... they're all, yeah.
I'm particularly worried about all of them.
Yeah, very specifically worried about the entire lot. Yeah, I just think England need a bit, not quite luck, but you just need, like the last series in Australia, England started reasonably well, drummer, and Vince was going quite well. And obviously
I remember that.
Yeah, and he was a player who has clearly, a lot of people believe, has sort of under-delivered on his talent, and that's probably true. But he was going nicely, and then he got that. There was that run out, and it was like an absolutely stonking direct hit.
I'd kind of repressed that memory.
Yeah, and you just thought, like, obviously you can't change history, but say that doesn't happen, and Vince goes on to make a little score, and his confidence is up, and then suddenly, you know, you just feel, well, it's a cliche, but you know, England have to start well, but. Just things have to fall in place at the moment. We haven't always been that far away necessarily. It's just
there's an awful lot that has to go right.
Yeah,
can't afford many things to go wrong. But if everything goes right, there's a chance. But it's on a chance
we might lose 3-2.
It's on a very delicate tightrope.
The one thing that does excite me about the series, and I think I've said this before, though, is just obviously England going. Heavy underdogs, not just kind of underdogs in the sense that history is against them, but underdogs in the sense that the team just doesn't look that strong. but there's a chance for heroes to be born out there.
Yeah,
heroes true. To be made. You know, Haseeb, Hameed, Joss, Butler.
Why are you talking like that?
Just trying to deliver it, you know, get people excited. No, so John, like that does excite me. The thought that, you know, could one or two of those players bring us the Ashes home?
The thought that
make themselves heroes.
Rory Burns could have a good series, couldn't he? I think that's right. I think they've got a very tough task, haven't they? And you know, just to answer my own question about the Australian bowling attack. If there's one bowler I'm particularly worried about, it's Josh Hazlewood and Nathan Lyon. Hazlewood is, for me, especially in Australian conditions, is just people. It's a cliche to kind of describe him as the new McGrath, but he's just
the new McGrath.
He's gone up another level, I think, in recent times. And then Nathan Lyon, kind of famously underrated, so famously underrated that he's not really underrated anymore. But again, I fear I'm going to be watching a lot of Nathan Lyon. 4 wicket hauls this winter. The Australian batting's maybe a little bit thinner, but still, you know, plenty about them, spearheaded by Smith and Labuschagne and Warner. So, you know, there's I think some of the England batsmen would get in that Australia team, but in those three, you know, they've got, aside from Joe Root, you know, there's three plus Joe Root are the 4 outstanding batsmen in this series, you know, and Australia have got 3 of them.
Can I just interject?
Yeah,
just,
go on.
Just on your note about Hazlewood, just when you're talking about Hazlewood, I think he is a smooth operator, isn't he? And it just, you know, just you saying his name then, thinking about him bowling in Australia, had me thinking back to India getting bowled out for 36, of course, this time last year. And he took, 5 for 8 in 5 overs? Probably not show the highlights of that to the England batsmen, I think.
Well, arguably they should. But yes, it might kind of put the wind up them a bit. Well, it's kind of touching on that, having talked about this for a while, you know, on paper, you could start to think that this is a bit of a mismatch. But one potential worry for the Australians is that they just haven't played very much Test cricket for a long time. You know, they'd not got much Test cricket in their legs. There was that series a year ago that you're talking about there against India, which despite bowling them out for 36, they went on to lose. But that is the only Test series they've played since the start of the pandemic. So they've only played a handful of Tests in the last 2 years. England have played loads in that time. You know, not always with great success, but they have been playing a lot. So there are questions about some of the Australian players. You know, we sort of, in some senses, we're going off reputation with some of them. You know, yeah, well, Warner's obviously just had a great T20 World Cup, but, you know, is he still the same batsman in Tests as he was a couple of years ago? Labuschagne had that phenomenal 2019, and so therefore is considered one of the best batsmen in the world. I think he still is, but
players,
was it a purple patch or, you know, we'll see.
You talk about kind of visualization and, what is that the right word? You know, imagining kind of what's going to happen. As you're saying those players, I can just see Warner slaying balls over sort of cover point. And Australia being like 120 for no loss at lunch. I can just see it in my head. It's just that.
It's going to make a nice little ICC video clip, isn't it? Just intercut.
Just a shot of me. And Kenzie.
Yeah. Me talking rubbish. Intercut with Warner just smashing it out of the ground.
Just going to town.
We're going to move on to him, but before we do, I've got a composite 11 for you.
Brilliant.
How do you feel about that? Christmas come early.
Come on.
Merry Christmas. So what I've done is I've looked at the two teams, Australia and England, and I've picked 1-11. Some would describe it as a composite 11.
Groundbreaking.
Here's what I've got. See what you make of this. Warner, Burns. They're my opening two. Then a middle order of Labuschagne, Smith and Root. Stokes at 6. Butler as the keeper. Not in this batting order, but Lyon as my spinner. And then 3-man seam attack of Cummins, Hazlewood and Anderson. What do you think about that? There are
interesting,
surprisingly large number of English players.
Very surprising.
5 English players, 6 Aussies.
Interesting. I'd probably, you could argue, put Stark in there.
Ahead of Anderson.
Possibly.
Maybe. So, I mean, maybe now, and in Australian conditions.
I've tried, We've tried not to write Anderson off, although I've done it a couple of times. Yeah, surely at some point it's going to, you know, his legs, you know, he's going to run out of gas.
Yeah.
And this is, by all accounts, one of the toughest assignments in cricket, isn't it? To go and slog away in Australia for over five tests. So I hope it does. I hope it's not the case. And I hope he has a stellar series and takes bags of wickets, but we'll see.
You'd imagine he's not going to play all five. Mm-hmm. And it there could be a kind of, whether official or unofficial, rotation policy between him and Broad. He's done well in Australia in the past, certainly 11 years ago. He was one of the key players in that England win. That is a long time ago. Kind of remarkable that he's still playing, was very much in the middle of his career at that point. But I suppose I'm picking him there on reputation.
Using your heart.
Yeah. Which I think I'm entitled to do.
Go for it, mate. It's Christmas.
It's my bloody podcast. after all of that, Tone, what's your prediction for this series? Who's going to win? Which of these two teams is going to win?
Well, I made a right balls up of the World T20 predictions, so how wrong can I be this time? I don't know.
It's difficult to be as wrong as that.
Yeah, true.
There are only two teams taking part.
I'd probably take 4-1.
Okay. That's a good attitude.
Yeah. Look, if England can win a test, that'd be bloody brilliant. If England can win a
dream
test,
big.
I'll be happy. Give us the first test.
Will you, though? If it finishes 4-1 and we're doing our review of the series, will you be
happy, but we'll have had a happy moment.
Depends when it comes.
Exactly. If we win one of the first three tests, I'd say, good on you. Yeah. If we win 4 or 5, we're already 3 down. It's mm-hmm. Yeah, it's less exciting, isn't it?
It's really annoying because I was going to say 4-1 as well. I will go 3-1.
Hmm.
I do think England can win a test. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't win a test. It's probably unlikely there's going to be a draw, but given, there could be weather around, seeing what's happened in Brisbane at the moment.
Could be pandemics around as
well.
Could
be pandemics around. So I'm going to go 3-1, but yeah, I think it'd be a brave man to back England. If there is going to be 5-0, we know which way that's going.
Yeah. I do think as well, the chat that's come out of the ECB and stuff over the years about how, the Ashes are the priority and they start talking about the Ashes years ahead. The fact that we're going to another Ashes series expecting it to be 4-1 at best.
Well, that 4-1's a good result.
Does somewhat make... They should just stop talking about it.
Mm.
Forget the Ashes, if anything. But it's probably something they should have done years ago. Bugger the Ashes. Just get to that when they get to it and start concentrating on everything else that's going on.
Concentrate on the 100.
Yeah. That's the real quiz. Just get, I don't know, create a good test setup and then an Ashes victory will come.
Mm.
Don't try and it's kind of foist every other series off as build up and then arrive literally raw.
Yeah.
And with a team that no one expects to even make a dent. So I just, yeah.
They might surprise us.
They might. I want them to, but...
But they won't.
Yeah, just that. Okay, once we get this Ashes series out of the way, let's stop talking about the Ashes.
Agreed. That's a pact. Okay, Tim, we touched earlier when talking about BT coverage. The reason BT are scrambling to find a commentary team is because they don't want to carry the Australian broadcaster feed, which will include as part of the commentary team Michael Vaughan. And the reason for that is because Vaughan is very much embroiled in the racism crisis that is engulfing English cricket at the moment, precipitated, of course, by Azeem Rafiq's appearance in front of a Commons Select Committee a couple of weeks ago. Since we last spoke, Azeem Rafiq's own conduct has come under the spotlight. Some text messages emerged from a decade or so ago of an anti-Semitic nature, and he owned up to that and issued an apology. To his credit, actually, he has always been keen to stress that, the issues he's talking about are institutional, and he never was trying to kind of hang individuals out to dry. But that was another twist in the story that hadn't happened when we last spoke. But yes, it continues to rumble on with the Vaughan stuff. His involvement is that Azeem Rafiq alleges that in 2009, when he, Rana Naveed Hassan, Adil Rashid and Ajmal Shahzad were about to take to the field for Yorkshire, that Michael Vaughan said to them, there are too many of you lot, we need to do something about it. Vaughan has categorically denied saying that, but two of the other players, Adil Rashid and Ronan Navid Ahsan, both said that they remember him saying it too, although Ajmal Shahzad says he has no recollection of it. The BBC have stood Vaughan down. He will not be involved in their coverage of the Ashes this winter. And as we say, BT are scrambling to find another commentary team so that Vaughan doesn't have to be involved in their coverage either. There's a lot going on in cricket, Tone, at the moment, isn't there? But what do you make of all this?
It's a complete mess. Yeah. It's really difficult, partly because I it's hard to see a way through it at the moment. There's no denial. I don't think anyone could deny that the sort of institutional issues that exist as they do in wider society as well, in areas of wider society, and that needs addressing and is probably almost certainly, you know, should have been addressed years ago. The sort of personal stuff and the accusations and the individual instances of alleged racism or alleged sexism in some, you know, some of these capacities. It's difficult. I think there's too much. I don't know. I don't see a way through. We're almost at a bit of an impasse now where, yeah, people, because in some quarters an apology is accepted, in some quarters it hasn't been. And effectively careers are at stake. And I know, Azeem Rafiq obviously said in front of the MPs that he felt his career was at best undermined and probably a lot more, you know, possibly sort of towards kind of finished, really, in terms of it being a sort of passion and an actual career. Some of the stuff, I don't know, the stuff with Vaughan, the stuff with Simon Hughes at the Cricketer, you know, he's been sort of relieved of his role as editor at large at the Cricketer magazine for, yeah, trying to or discussing these things
on a podcast,
yeah, which I don't know, which seems very strange to me, because Simon Hughes has always come across as someone who's pretty measured, pretty reasonable, pretty sensitive. Now that I've never met him, I don't know, you know, I'm trying to say that doesn't seem like the right approach to me.
Yeah.
Likewise with Vaughan. There was a lot, certainly when it came out, I mean, we obviously spoke a bit about Azeem Rafiq on the last pod, sort of immediately following the select committee hearing. Definitely there's a lot of sympathy with the situation and the stuff that he went through. Now, the stuff that came out a couple of days later about him is obviously extremely unfortunate as well. To which he apologised, and for the most part, you know, lots of the group, or certainly the Jewish groups that spoke up or made their voice heard afterwards, sort of accepted the apology and said it was, you know, and believed that it was genuine and everything, which is great. Now that's almost as it should be in a way, and hopefully he's learned from that. Again, it was 10 years ago plus. Now the fact that Vaughan's the line that Vaughan has taken is that he has denied that he ever said it. Do you get the sense that if he'd said, actually, I apologise for the offence caused, it was a bad joke, I don't think people would be like, oh yeah, okay, that's fine, Michael. Because it's almost wrapped up with a lot of other stuff about his personality now, which has become, now I'm not saying I like Michael Vaughan, I've never spent any time with him, but I don't necessarily like the character he has portrayed over the last few years on Twitter, but it's almost like, yeah, there was a lot of people I saw a lot of commentary after the stuff that was levelled at Rafiq came out, basically being like, it's very telling now that how gleeful and kind of how people are, a lot of parties are kind of really like jumping on Rafiq and taking sort of almost pleasure in the fact that he is also transgressed and is basically guilty of the things that he is accusing others of. But, and it's not all about Michael Vaughan, and a lot of people have said that, but equally there was a lot of glee when Michael Vaughan was the one implicated, wasn't there? There was lots of people jumped straight onto him because they don't like Michael Vaughan. So I don't feel like the reactions and the treatment that various people are getting in this piece are actually necessarily fair, but you know, I don't know. It doesn't create the kind of situation where we can move through this whole issue. It's just kind of, it's seemingly to create more division and more bad blood. I don't know what the solution is to that. Is the solution that everyone just has to apologize, or which they probably should anyway, you know? But I don't know how. Yeah, I'm sort of struggling to work out how we actually kind of make better on this.
How we move forward? I agree with you. It does seem to be getting just more and more poisonous rather than less. There was definitely a gleefulness with which the Michael Vaughan stuff was received in some quarters. Now that is because people don't like Michael Vaughan, but possibly that's because one of the reasons they don't like Michael Vaughan is because this allegation makes sense within the, in their view, within the pattern of behavior that Michael Vaughan has displayed. So you can say, yeah, it might be that it's, they're jumping on him because they don't like him. But if they don't like him because they think he was kind of borderline expressing those sorts of views in the, has expressed those sort of views in the past, then it's a bit of a blurred line, I suppose. But yes, I do know what you're saying, that there's not always necessarily equitable treatment. And it, a bit like what we're talking about earlier with Tim Paine, you know, people aren't leaping to Michael Vaughan's defense in the way that they might to other people because they don't like him, and perhaps rightly so. We can get too far down the rabbit hole, I suppose, on the particular Vaughan stuff. For me, the balance of probability is that he did say it because three people have said that they remember him saying it. I don't know. As he said, I don't know how we move forward. If he does say, yeah, look, I don't remember saying it, but it sounds like I did, I apologize. Is that enough? You know, what is it? Should that be the end of his career? That doesn't seem to make sense to me, but other people might say yes. But I don't know what is an acceptable punishment. You know, what should he do to atone? Is there any way to atone? There must surely be some way to atone. Are we now in a world where context and intention no longer matter? And that seems to make a world of difference here. And I'm saying, I don't know what the context or the intention was, but there is a difference, it seems to me. If we assume that Michael Vaughan did say that, if he intended it as a joke, it would be an extremely ignorant, stupid joke that he shouldn't make. But that is different to him waking up in the morning, thinking racist thoughts and saying deliberately to those people because he actually thinks there are too many of you and we need to do something about that. There just is a difference there. So which of those two things it is, for me, would determine whether or not this should be the end of his career.
And I do think it is important because I know that Azeem Rafiq has said that he doesn't want it to be all about Michael Vaughan. But as you say, the context and the intent is important, and if it's decided that isn't relevant, and that a misplaced or a misjudged attempt at you know what I'm trying to say is black and white, and that that is career over, then that does change the kind of the fabric of society. Well, doesn't
absolutely
it?
As you said before, stand-up comedians say things that in another context would be completely unacceptable, but we understand that there's a difference in context, and it that does seem to be a problem. You know, that if we agree that that's how we want to proceed, that does create problems for a lot of things. It's difficult. I don't know how we move forward from here. I don't know what the answer is.
As you say, those words, which they have been read, literally read back to Vaughan, and they've been read out, you know, ad nauseum now on in the coverage, when sort of delivered with a kind of somber, straight, serious tone, they sound awful. But when you see the footage from the match and from the moment it was accused, you know, whether you like Michael Vaughan or not, there's clearly no way that's what he meant. Yeah. What he was saying there.
Now that doesn't mean, as I say, this is not in any way to say like, oh, well, it's just a joke, forget it.
Exactly.
Because clearly it made certainly Azeem Rafiq extremely uncomfortable at best. And, you know, and it was part of a pattern of other stuff that was going on in Yorkshire. So yeah, this is not to downplay it or excuse it at all, but it just, whether or not it's now warranted that he, or, you know, that he should, that BT should, he's so radioactive that BT have to find a new feed, commentary feed, because they cannot have Michael Vaughan on their station. It just seems that we need to understand the context and the intention for that to make sense or not. as you say, though, Azeem Rafiq very keen to make sure that this isn't all about individuals. Mm. I'm glad that this story does continue to run, and you hope that meaningful change is coming. Certainly Tom Harrison's been saying a lot of stuff again, hasn't he? And, you know, he's kind of always on my TV at the moment. And you've got to think that the ECB they've got a lot of work to do.
They've got block booking at the House of Commons, haven't they?
Yeah. But that they are doing something, because it's reached a point, you know, they can't sweep this under the carpet. You know, they can't just try and wait it out, and they've got to do something.
Yeah, yeah. And it serves no one, it's to no one's benefit to hold on. Yeah, exactly. To kind of, I don't know. Yeah. I think we do desperately need some progress on this front. And it's kind of jarring, because in so many ways it appears there is a lot of progress. So when you get then situations like this and all of the accusations and the bits that feed into it, I don't know. It's then hard to work out the way forward. I mean, there's been some, cricket's been a real focus for this. I suppose as much as football, but certainly the way it's been dealt with from last summer and the very, you know, the powerful kind of words from Michael Holding and Ebony Rainford-Brent around the whole Black Lives Matter movement. Yeah, that was pretty striking. I think I mentioned about the miniseries that Mark Butcher did.
Watched that last week.
Yeah, which is very, very powerful, very quite moving. And,
brilliant.
And,
yeah,
and,
absolutely brilliant.
It was just exceptionally well done and really interesting. Certainly a few of those players were before our time. Mm. Just so valuable to hear those stories. Mm. The way those players have dealt with it and you know, now talking about it is, I thought it was a massive contribution to the whole issue. So I guess you just hope those kind of intelligent, considered voices are the ones that are heard above some of the more kind of vociferous, reactionary, kind of angry voices. Because yeah, certainly the way that, you know, someone like Mark Butcher talks about these things, I think is, as I say, a valuable contribution. It moves things forward. Maybe we spend too much time on Twitter, and actually, if you sort of pull your head out of that, then, you know, yeah, things are kind of a bit more
level-headed.
There's a bit more kind of appetite for progress and solutions rather than just
conversation.
Yeah, rather than just being kind of gleeful in other people's pain and sort of misfortune.
Yeah, I would thoroughly recommend watching that Mark Butcher.
I would thoroughly recommend spending less time on Twitter.
Well, I would. <Yeah. laughs> I would thoroughly recommend spending less time on Twitter. I'd thoroughly recommend watching that Mark Butcher documentary. And yeah, so switch off your little podcasts and go and dig that out. Okay, well, that is it, Tone, for the World Cricket Show this time. I'm getting very excited for the Ashes. I think I'm, having just spoken to you about it for hours, I'm even more excited than I was coming into this room. Are we bringing back Ashes Daily this time? That's the big question that the world wants answering.
I mean, that is a bold, given that we've only managed to kind of crank out about three podcasts this summer. We could try.
I'm going to drop in the tape from earlier this year where you were like, definitely we can do Ashes Daily this winter.
Well, why don't we try?
I mean, there's absolutely no way that my wife is going to agree to me doing a daily podcast.
I'll give her a call. I'll talk around.
Yeah.
Hang on. Let's not
rule anything in or out.
Yeah, let's not make any hasty decisions.
We've still got the Twitter handle. So that's the key first step. The rest of it writes itself, really.
There's
a
strong argument to do it just to build up a following on the Twitter handle to sell it on.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, if I don't know who would want it, but
BT Sport.
BT Sport, it's all yours. I mean, they could have it for $250,000.
Yeah.
$250,000.
250 G's.
250 large ones. Oh, God's sake.
You're having a lot of trouble with that iPad.
It's useless. Why don't we commit to doing Brisbane Daily? and we start there.
No, but that's the first step. I say let's commit to doing Sydney Daily, and then that, you know, then we're just kicking, and then that means we can kick the can down the road, worry about it later. That's Adam in January's problem.
Yeah,
that's not something I have to worry about now.
No, let's do it. I'll edit it. I'll take on the editing.
Okay.
I reckon we just give it a go.
Let's try
Let's give it a go. One last shot. one last roll of the dice. McRae will love it, to be fair.
Well, we do it all for McRae, don't we? All right. Well, we may or may not be doing Ashes Daily, but we're certainly going to be back after the first test with a full podcast. Just before we go, let's very, very, very quickly talk about India and New Zealand. And this could be just me talking about it, Tone, if you like. But it is a shame that we're doing this almost as an afterthought, because this is a test between the number one and two. This is a series, rather, between the number one and two sides in the world. And it was an absolutely fantastic game. The series, though, does feel a bit like an afterthought, coming so sort of hot on the heels of the T20 World Cup. You've got the Ashes just coming up, which I know doesn't involve them, but
they'll be watching that.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be watching that, and it's only two tests, and it's all, you know, it's done in and out very, very quickly. So it does feel like something that, again, scheduling Claxon, but if they had any sense about them, you know, they'd be scheduling a five test series or a four test series between these sides and making it like the event of the year. But that's obviously not what's happening. But anyway, it was an absolutely thrilling test match in Kanpur. India making 345 in their first innings, New Zealand replying with 296, India declaring 234 for seven. So New Zealand needed, well, their target was 284, and they were going really well at 79 for one. And then they were 118 for two with Williamson and Latham at the crease. And they probably weren't at any point thinking that they could pull it off, just because they were probably going to run out of time and were starting to bat for the draw. But we're looking pretty comfortable. But then India began to take wickets. Jadeja took four, Ashwin took three. They kept chipping away. New Zealand collapsed from 118 for two to 128 for six. They were then 155 for nine, before Ajaz Patel and Rachin Ravindra hung on for 10 overs as the final wicket pair to manage to scrape New Zealand through to a draw. So an absolutely brilliant effort to cling on. It keeps the series level and means that we go into the final game just as a straight shootout. How good was this game, Tone? Amazing. Amazing cricket.
Yeah. Yeah, no, as you say...
Come on, cricket, as I shouted at my TV.
Yeah, it's a shame. It hasn't crept under the radar. But there's been a lot of other stuff going on. I know the ICC have been taking some flack from a lot of quarters about some of the kind of World Cup qualifying, global qualifiers on the women's side. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of sort of heat around, hasn't there? Obviously, the Ashes build-up's in full swing. But yeah, quite an incredible rearguard action from New Zealand. I mean... It's another, when you consider kind of how limply England in the end drifted off in India last time out, it's another massive feather in New Zealand's cap, isn't it?
True. Although England did win the first test of that series, it remains to be seen what happens in the next one. If New Zealand crumble and India win comfortably, you know, it might be a different story. But it does mean that they're going into the final test of a series in India with a real opportunity to win the series. Which is pretty remarkable. It is only two tests. If it was four or five tests, you would still make India pretty strong favourites. The Indian spinners, Axar Patel, took five wickets in the first innings as well. They're just very, very difficult for anyone to negotiate in India. So it's still a tall order. But I was enjoying watching Latham and Williamson bat. You know, certainly Latham's now crept into the top 10 of the test rankings as well. So two of the best batsmen in the world just faced with that challenge. It is a shame that it's not more of that there's not more kind of spotlight on it right at the moment. Maybe there is in India and New Zealand. Maybe this is just this us in our bubble here, but in our Ashes bubble, our Ashes Daily bubble, our Ashes Daily. But yeah, exciting prospect for the second and final test.
Yeah, big time.
All right, well, we're going to bring it to an end there. If you enjoy the World Cricket Show, we will be back after the first test, possibly in between as well with some Ashes dailies. But in the interim, get more involved on the internet. We're on, you know, the major social networking platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com. But that's going to be it. You got to race back to work now, Tone?
Yeah. Stuff to get on with.
I've got a race off as well. Didn't even ask you how your trip to London was.
Yeah, it was nice. Cheers, mate.
Good. Sorted. Bye. Stay in school, everyone. Bye for now.
Cheers. It
can smell your fear. Ba-da-da-ba-ba, ba-da-da-ba-ba.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.